Please stand by. Welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Omegamon XE for IMS, Situation Usage and Best Practices. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn how Omegamon XE for IMS will help you meet the performance and availability management challenges of IMS. The speaker for today's teleconference is Ed Woods, Consulting IT Specialist, IBM Corporation. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to Mr. Woods.
Thank you. My name is Ed Woods with IBM Corporation. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend this webcast. I trust you'll find this to be an informative and interesting topic. I assembled this presentation as a companion piece, if you will, to a comparable presentation I did about a month ago on Omegamon DB2 situations and best practices and things like that. This is in response to one of the more common requests I get, which is just general ideas on situations, building and creating situations, explaining to folks what situations are and what the capabilities are, etc. I think situations, in general, one of the more powerful aspects of the Omegamon XE suite in general, and give you some very nice capabilities, not only from an alert standpoint, but also from automated correction standpoints, etc. So going to the slide that says agenda, we're going to do a brief introduction to the Tivoli Enterprise Portal for those that are not familiar with the term. We'll talk about situations, the benefits of situations, how you build them, how you create them, how you can use them. We'll talk a fair amount about situation creation options, usages, just usages in general, and recommended best practices and strategies on creating situations. Then we'll get into the notion of alerts, types of alerts, typical kind of things you would alert on when we're talking about IMS, performance and availability management. And then I have about 20 or so examples of useful IMS situations. These are examples of things I might create when working with a customer, and some of these are just good general starting points. Plus, also keep in mind that Omegamon XE for IMS comes with an entire set of product-provided situations, a fairly extensive list that you can use as a starting point, and I'll show you what that list is once we get to that point in the presentation. Afterwards, there will be time for question and answers, and I'll be more than happy to address any questions you may have as we get through this. So going to the next slide that says Omegamon XE for IMS on ZOS v4.1, components and facilities. Omegamon XE for IMS is a powerful real-time performance and availability monitoring and management capability. It does both real-time as well as historical monitoring and systems management. So from a real-time monitoring standpoint, you can monitor the various resources, subsystems, address spaces, databases, monitor them both from a performance as well as an availability standpoint. There's response time analysis capabilities as well as bottleneck analysis capabilities. There's tracing facilities, a variety of exception and alerting facilities, which is what we'll be talking about and focusing on today. And this monitoring can happen both at the individual subsystem level as well as from a data sharing multi-system perspective. We're not going to really talk about the stuff on the right today, which is more the historical capabilities. There's been other presentations that I've done that focus on that. Our focus today is going to be really more on real-time performance and availability monitoring and management. So going to the next slide that says Tivoli Enterprise Portal, the TEP, Integrated Performance, Availability, and Systems Management. One of the key strategies or concepts of what Tivoli is doing in terms of building and crafting performance monitoring solutions is integration via this thing called the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, or the TEP. The TEP integrates all sorts of powerful alerting and automation capabilities so that you have a consistent suite in terms of how you can monitor and manage systems. And this could be ZOS systems, open systems like Linux, Unix, Windows, Z-Linux, whatever middleware components, as well as the components that might be running on a mainframe host, such as your IMS, your DB2, your CICS, the ZOS operating system, Unix system services, etc. The TEP truly becomes a common interface for a whole variety of Tivoli performance and availability and system management solutions. And so what we're going to talk about today is how Omegamon XE can leverage that aspect of the TEP and how you can get benefit out of that in terms of a much more meaningful alerting and automation capability within Omegamon IMS. Going to the next slide that says business applications are complex in nature, what we have here is an example of a typical dashboard view that I might build for a customer. And this dashboard view would include a graphic that shows the flow of a set of related systems, or maybe a critical application. It would include monitoring and management points for a whole variety of technologies, including ZOS. In this case, we show Z-Linux as well, middleware components, network monitoring, storage, and then we also see over on the right side, we have IMS database and IMS transactions. So you see in this case, the green circles represent the status of a monitored resource, and you notice that in the section that says IMS, we do have a red icon which indicates that a Megamon IMS has indicated or detected an alert. One of the nice things about being able to use the Tivoli Enterprise Portal is you have the ability then to integrate all this information to a single consistent monitoring interface and then drill down, do detailed analysis from there. So going to the next slide that says about situations. Basically, when you look at it or think about it, situations are one of the core building blocks of systems management logic that come with the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. You can use situations to highlight performance issues, use situations to highlight availability issues. Situations may be used to look at things from an application perspective, as well as from an IMS subsystem perspective, track the availability of critical resources, track the performance utilization of critical resources or critical applications. It gives you the ability then to highlight performance and availability issues from a whole variety of angles, if you will. And what I find powerful about situations is the flexibility, the ability to craft the situations to the needs of your environment. So going to the next slide that says situations allow for powerful and flexible alerts. The Megamon XE approach using Tivoli Enterprise Portal allows for, I think, a much more intelligent alerting and integrated correlated capability, if you will. The idea then is you can take situations as building blocks and tie them together and integrate them into things such as the dashboard view that I showed in the prior two slides. Situations can incorporate Boolean logic, so it gives you the flexibility then to make the situations much more meaningful. And I'll talk a little bit later about why that's important that the alerts be meaningful and actually have some value. Situations may be correlated with other situations, and situations that may also in turn drive automated corrections and actions. So it's not just an alert mechanism, it also is a way to drive automated corrections as well. So situations are the core building block of a lot of the intelligence and logic that makes up Tivoli, Omegamon, XE, using the Tivoli Enterprise Portal type of system management approach. So going to the next slide that says situations, usage, and benefits. Well, first and foremost, a situation may be used to highlight a performance and or availability issue. So in this case here, if you look on the left portion of the slide, you see red icons down the navigation tree. And if you follow it closely, you'll see that there's a red icon right next to IMS. If you position the cursor over that, you would get a flyover that would tell us what the alert is, which in this case, we have a response time alert. RTA stands for response time analyzer, so RTA TRAN alert. We have detected the transaction that's having a response time issue. So the flyover would tell us the name of the situation that's driving the alert. You could then in turn click on the blue icon to the left of the alert name in the flyover to see detail for the alert. So first and foremost, situations highlight potential issues. Going to the next slide, situations, usage, and benefits. Situations can also have actions attached to them. So in other words, a situation is more than just a way to highlight an issue. A situation can also be used to drive a corrective action. So in this case here, what we're looking at is if the situation, the response time analyzer alert that we looked at on the prior slide, if that situation fires, you have the ability to issue a command. In this case, this is going to be a command to the ZOS console. And what we're doing in this particular example is we're going to log a message to the console. And that message is going to have the text of a Megamon IMS demo message. And if you look closely, I'd click the button that says attribute substitution. And in here, we'll put in the response time analyzer group name, the response time analyzer group time, and some other relevant information that's all included in this particular alert. The idea then is that you could hear, in this case, we're just going to log it. But if we want to do some actual other ZOS console command, issue a command, issue a corrective action, whatever, this could also work from there as well, since this is, in essence, a string of information that's going to the ZOS console. Going to the next slide about usage and benefits of situations. You can also use situations just for informational event analysis. What I mean by that is basically when a situation fires and is true, it is also logged and retained and kept within the Tivoli infrastructure. What that means then is it is a way that you can go back then in turn and determine, well, if you're having certain events on the system, how often is this happening? If I'm hitting a high water mark in pool utilization, how often do I hit it? If I'm backing up a certain workload of transactions in the queue, how often does that happen? Is it something that happens once a day, once an hour, once a week, once a month? If it's an event that only happens very rarely, maybe it's not as important to me as if it's an event that happens on a continuing, ongoing basis. So part of the value of situations can also be just not even necessarily from an alerting standpoint or from an action standpoint, but also from an informational gathering standpoint. So if you look closely at the bar chart, this is the bar chart that you get from the enterprise view, which is one of the default views, and I've exploded up the bar chart. And the bar chart shows how many situations have fired in the last 24 hours, and in this case, you see that the RTA transaction alert has fired like 9 times in the last 24 hours we see here. So going to the next slide that says, a basic example situation. We're going to do an alert on IMS response time analyzer. And we're going to do an alert if the response time is greater than N seconds. Or actually, the granularity is fractions of milliseconds, to be precise. Now, this is a fairly simple alert that we're looking at here. We're just looking at a single metric type of alert. And in this case, then, you see in the middle where it says R1 time, and it says greater than, and it looks like we're doing 20 milliseconds in this case here. You can specify then the alert criteria in the middle. On the top portion of the slide, you see there's various tabs. Right now we're on the formula tab, which is where we define what the situation alert logic is. The distribution tab is where you go to specify where the situation runs. The idea then is you can have certain alerts on some IMS systems and not on others. You might have certain management logic that you might want to run in production, but not in test, or vice versa. You might have different workloads on different systems, just because of the nature of different applications on different systems. So the distribution tab then gives the ability to say where does the situation run so that you can build the alert and then manage it from a central point of control. The expert advice tab lets you go in and specify expert advice wherein you can say if someone sees the alert fire, it gives them an indication of what they should do with the alert. The action tab, that is where we specified the action that we looked at on a couple slides prior. The action tab then lets you specify a command so that if the situation is true, it will issue an action. In the case of IMS, you'll typically run it to the ZOS console. So we see our tabs at the top. That's what those are for. We look at the alert criteria in the middle of the slide. Down towards the bottom, you see we specify a sampling interval. The sampling interval basically says how frequently does the situation in question check for the problem. And here we're saying we're going to check once every minute. Now, the more often you check, you know, obviously the more often that there's going to be work that's going to be performed by a Megamon on behalf of that check. We'll talk about sampling intervals and things like that a little bit later, but I just want to point out this is where you specify it. If you look over on the right lower side, you see critical. You can specify a severity, critical, warning, informational. And then underneath that, you see a little box that says run at startup. Run at startup basically means that when a Megamon starts up, it will automatically go ahead and start executing this situation. If you look over on the upper left corner of the slide where it says start-stop situations, this basically is where you can then define the situation and then go ahead and start it. And by starting it, that will send it out to the various IMS managed systems, as we term it, that you've defined on the distribution tab and actually have this situation go ahead and go out and do its execution and do its checks, etc. So going from this example of how to define a situation, going to the next slide, we see example RTA alert situation has fired. So here we're looking at the response time analyzer display, and we see our various RTA information down at the bottom. So we see our various response time analyzer groups, and we have our input times, program input times, processing, output queue times, and total response times, etc. And when the situation fires, you'll have a red icon that will appear, in this case, over the IMS icon, and then will turn to appear over the IMS in question where the response time alert has happened. When you see the flyover, you click on the link, and then you would get the additional detail. So we do that click on the icon next to the alert name, and that takes us to what we see on the next slide that says situation detail for RTA alert. So here's what we see. This is a typical alert detail view. So in this case, we see on the left, what is the problem? On the right, we see the details. And so we'll see, highlighted in red, that the alert was on the R1 response time. We see then other additional information for the alert. What system, what group, what are the other response time buckets, what's the IMS ID, etc. And if you look closely, you see there's an initial and a current situation value. The reason you see two breakouts there is because the initial is when the alert was originally true. The current is the current status. So in other words, if this has been a true alert for quite a while, you might see a difference between the two sets of numbers. Down at the bottom, you see on the right, expert advice. Expert advice, again, is user customizable and definable. And basically, what that then in turn gives you is the ability to that, if someone sees the alert, gives you the ability to say, well, this is what we recommend you do if the alert fires. Commands that may need to be issued. Subject matter experts that may need to be called. You can embed HTTP links and things like that into there as well. On the lower left side, you see predefined actions. This is where you can specify take action commands. And these would be, again, ZOS console commands typically that you would do. And you could have these then predefined and ready to go so that if there is an issue, the person in question can go ahead and issue the appropriate commands. So that's a basic example of a single attribute situation. We're just saying if response time is greater than a certain amount, generate alert. Very simple, very basic kind of a capability. Let's take that to the next step then. So we go to the next slide that says take advantage of Boolean logic. So in this case, now we're looking at a little bit more sophisticated example. As with all things in systems, different applications may have different performance standards, and as a result, you probably will need to set different response time thresholds for different types of applications. So in this case, what we're looking at is we have the response time analyzer gathering our response time data here. And response time analyzer, or RTA as it's called, has the ability to group related transactions together in the groups, so you can do groups of transactions, programs, scheduling classes, etc., and give those groups names. So here what we're saying is for the various transaction and program groups, we're going to have different response time thresholds. So for park versus delete park versus system, we're going to have different levels. So for the park group, we're going to go with 20 milliseconds. For overall system throughput, we're going to look at 30 milliseconds. For the delete application, we're going to look at 25 milliseconds, and that's the threshold that we're going to use in terms of setting our levels of alerting. What is nice about the Boolean logic capability, then, is you can make the alerts much more granular and meaningful and do a lot of work and a lot of logic with a relatively small number of situations. If you look at the green bar towards the bottom that says situation formula capacity, basically what that does is that gives you an indication of how full, in other words, how many items of information you can put into this situation. So in this case, we've used 29% or almost a quarter of our logic capability for this situation. If we want to add additional logic, you can click the Add Conditions button that I have highlighted, and then you could add additional attributes, in other words, columns. You can add additional lines, and so this is how you can have all this and or logic built into the situation. Going to the next slide that says use Boolean logic to reduce the number of required situations. So what you could do is what we have on the left, which is then I would have a separate situation for my response time alert for my system, and then I have a separate situation for my response time alert for my park transactions. Well, I could take that and just pull them all together using the Boolean logic example we saw on the prior slide and do it all with one situation. And then I could even add additional stuff as well. The advantage of this approach is it will reduce the number of overall required situations, and this saves overhead in a couple different ways. One aspect is, of course, you're going to have fewer situations, so there's less work from an administrative standpoint in terms of having to build, deploy, define, and distribute all these. Also, this means that you'll have fewer situations than repetitively scanning and checking for information on the monitoring infrastructure. A lot of times, my approach is I like to use a less is more type of strategy. What that means then is basically, if I can do as much or more work and have to create fewer pieces to get that done, so much the better. So where possible, where it makes sense, one of my recommendations is exploit these Boolean logic capabilities that are built into the situations. This gives you a lot of flexibility and a lot of power and can save cost, not only from a monitoring standpoint, but just from an alert management and human interaction standpoint. Going to the next slide that says use persistence option to smooth alert spikes. Basically, what this means then is you'll have certain alerts that basically you're monitoring a number that tends to spike. In other words, CPU percent is a good example. It could go up, it could go down, it could go down, it could go up. With response time, like in the example we're looking at here, you could have outliers. And so you could be looking at an average response time number, but because of one outlier, the response time has skewed. Or maybe the response time buckets have reset based on sampling intervals and things like that. And then in turn, with an outlier showing up, it skewed the number. So in order to basically weed out these outliers or weed out these spikes, what you can do is you can click the advanced button, and then you get a pop-up that will let you then in turn specify persistence. And so in this example, what we're saying is the response time alert needs to be true for 3 consecutive intervals before the alert will fire. This way, then, you can eliminate those spikes and eliminate those outliers. Certain things, it oftentimes makes sense, especially if you have types of things that you're monitoring that tend to be very spiky in nature, such as CPU, I/O rates, things like that, even response time numbers. A lot of times, those things can tend to fluctuate up and down wildly. So probably if you're going to alert on things like that, it probably makes more sense to factor in some type of a persistence that's true for n number of intervals in a row before you actually do a real alert on it. Going to the next slide that says, exploit managed system list to simplify situation deployment. This is one of the nice facilities of the Tivoli Enterprise portal. One of the beauties of having an integrated methodology is it gives you the ability then to build situations, build alerts, and management logic from a central point of control and then distribute it out to wherever you need to send it out in your enterprise. You do not then have to reach out and touch each individual monitoring component to set the levels or alerts. You do it from a central point of control. This can be a huge time saver, especially in large shops and large environments where you have a lot of subsystems, a lot of applications, etc. The more that you can cut down on the amount of work, and just from a human interaction standpoint, so much the better. So the notion of a managed system list, then, is you can take the managed systems. Now, to define our terms, a managed system, when we're talking about IMS, would be an IMS subsystem. So IMS-A, IMS-B, IMS-C, whatever you call your IMS system, that's going to translate to a managed system in our parlance here. So you can create lists of these systems. So you could have all your production IMSs, all your test IMSs, all your dev IMSs. Put them into a group so that then if you build an alert, like in this example, that you want to send automatically to all your test IMSs, well, all you have to do then is just select that managed system list and then start it and off you go. There's also one of the product-provided managed system lists that you see it says asterisk MVS underscore IMS Plex. That's a default one, and basically what that is then is a managed system list for all IMS systems. So in other words, if you had some that would be relevant to all your IMSs, regardless of what type they are or whatever, or what you use them for, you could deploy it to that managed system list. One of the nice things about using that particular product-provided managed system list is as new IMSs come online, they'll automatically get put into that list. Whereas with the user-defined managed system lists, you would have to go ahead and update those. So going to the next slide that says situations, general recommendations, rules of thumb. I have some general philosophies in terms of how I like to build these types of monitoring and management environments, best practices, I should say, in terms of creating situations. And first and foremost, my thought process is you want situations to be meaningful, actionable, and useful. Now, at first glance, some of this might seem rather common sense, but in a way it is, if you think about it, really just applying common sense to this process. First of all, I want the alert to be meaningful. And by that, I'm suggesting that the situation, because the naming of a situation is flexible, you should try to have a naming standard so that people can identify, first of all, that it's a situation that was built by you, the customer, but that also that the name is meaningful so that you don't necessarily have to have a subject matter expert to at least look at the alert name and deduce some type of meaning as to what it's about. I also suggest adopting a naming convention. Most folks will typically go and do something like have a 2 or 3 characters on the front end of the alert name so that you can very quickly and easily identify all of the situations that you, the customer, have defined as opposed to what was provided by IBM. One thing I'll point out is that each of the Omegamon monitoring tools, as well as the ITM distributed monitoring middleware, the IT CAM solutions, etc., all provide these sets of product-provided situation alerts. So there's a lot of situations that are already defined in there, and so it's useful to have a quick and easy way to determine what are the ones that you build versus the ones that were provided by IBM. Just having a basic naming convention makes it much easier to identify customer-created versus product-provided situations. So meaningful, just something that's clearly obvious and understandable. Actionable, what does that mean? Basically, what I mean by actionable is that if a situation fires and you see an alert on one of these Omegamon portal displays, that it actually is an indication of a real problem, that it's something that someone needs to go and take a corrective action on. If there's a red light on the screen, that implies to me that there's an issue that someone needs to be addressing. So, actionable could also mean having the appropriate notification. In some shops, having a red icon that shows up on a screen on a dashboard view, and that someone actually has that view open and is looking at it, is good enough. In other scenarios, actionable might actually mean that you need some other kind of notification in the form of issuing a command that then in turn can drive some other kind of notification, say email or something like that, or a page or whatever. Another aspect of actionable is having predefined actions where appropriate on the alerts. This means then in turn you have some expert advice on there that says if this alert fires, this is what's going on, here's what you need to do, etc. It also means having the actions on the take action command kind of capabilities. If there are actions that need to be done, have those actions defined on the situation so that when it fires, people can take the alert and actually do the corrective action. And then finally, useful. Well, it would be nice if it's useful. And so again, this is maybe common sense in one level, but another level, what I think is very important is, again, I use the term less is more. I very much believe in the notion of less is more in the sense that eliminating the noise and eliminating phony alert indicators is very important. And it's very significant because where some customers have struggled is they may get so aggressive with creating so many situations that you have so much management alerting noise out there that the noise drowns out the real issues. It's not that the real issues aren't being detected, they're just being obscured by all the other red lights that really don't have as much significance. So there are certain things that are informational in nature, and there are other things that are critical in nature and require action. And so that's where you need to, when you build situations and create this management logic, have some type of philosophy in terms of, well, what really needs to be critical? What really needs to be warning? What really is just informational in nature? And then finally, if an alert fires, it should indicate an actual issue. And that issue should mean that there's some kind of an owner, there's a consequence, someone's going to address it, somebody's going to fix it. Going back to the statement I made earlier, if the light's red, someone probably should be taking some type of corrective action. Going to the next slide that says situations may be correlated with other situations. So in this case then, you can correlate two situations together and use situations themselves as building blocks and then combine this management logic together. So like in this example, we're correlating an RTA response time alert with something from DB2. And then you can click the add condition button to add additional logic to this as well. Now, going to the next slide that says considerations for more complex situations. When you get into these situations that are more complex in nature, where you're correlating things and you're going cross-table, cross-agent, things like that, like in the prior example, we're technically correlating information between IMS monitoring and DB2 monitoring, the idea being that I want to know if response time is an issue, but I also only really care if it's somehow related to database in this particular problem I'm trying to isolate here. In that case, then, that situation needs to be evaluated further up in the Tivoli infrastructure. So it might end up being evaluated in the TEMS or the Tivoli Enterprise Monitoring Server level as opposed to at the level of the agent or the TEMA, as we call it, which is the lowest level of monitoring. Going to the next slide that says additional situation considerations recommendations. When you're creating and deploying situations, you want to consider a few things. First and foremost, the number of situations being deployed. The more of that logic you're distributing out there to more managed systems, potentially there is more cost and overhead involved. And that cost and overhead is both in terms of cost on the monitoring infrastructure, but also your own cost in terms of the time it takes from a human interaction standpoint to build and define and create these. So you want to consider the number of situations, the number of managed systems, in this case the IMS subsystems, the refresh frequency of the situations. How frequently do they do that check interval that we looked at before? And then also, then I mentioned, carefully consider the number of required situations. If you can take advantage of Boolean logic and reduce the number of situations, you can potentially save yourself a lot of work, but also save yourself some cost of monitoring as well. Another example of this might be, I've had some customers that every time they created a critical, they'd also create a warning. Well, my question then was, well, if I'm just automatically creating this by rote, but it doesn't really have a value. So in other words, if by based on that warning, well, am I actually going to do something? If the warning has a value created, but if I'm doing the warning just to create it more just by habit, well, then maybe it doesn't have value. So in other words, don't create it and reduce the overall number of required situations. If the warning will give me an opportunity to basically head off a problem before it goes to a critical, then the warning has value. And then, of course, take advantage of things like managed system lists so that the right situations go to the right place. So instead of just sending out everything to all IMSs, send out production-worthy or production-oriented situations to production systems and not the test and vice versa. Just cut down the number of situations to what you really need to have deployed. Another aspect of this as well is be aware of the situation refresh rates. And where this is relevant, let's say, for example, I have multiple situations that look at response time. So in other words, this is basically multiple situations that are all looking at the response time table of information that's being gathered by the agent. Rather than have a bunch of these, each monitoring the response time information at different intervals, if you can have a consistent standard where they're all being gathered and analyzed on the same interval, what will happen then is the infrastructure will optimize, or the term we call duperize, these situations so that you can then have really just one check on the data, and then the information gets parsed out to the needs of the various situations. This is a good way to reduce cost of monitoring overhead if you do it appropriately. So where it makes sense to do this, you know, feel free. Going to the next slide that says manage situations, check situation status, and sampling intervals. One of the things that you can do is you can do a right click on the manage system, select from the pop-up that says manage situations, and then you'll see what situations are deployed to the system in question. You'll see the situation names, which ones are set to auto start, which ones have expert advice. And then if you look over to the right, you see the interval, which is how frequently it's doing that check or that refresh, if you will, to look for information. And so when you look at this particular example here, you see all sorts of different intervals and things like that. So therefore, the odds that you're going to see much of anything will take advantage of this duperization I mentioned before is much less. Let's go to the slide that says eliminating the noise, time of day and day of week considerations. Inevitably, there's going to be different workloads, different system characteristics depending upon the nature of the workload, and that could be relative to the workload or relative to the time of day, day of week processing, etc. You may have heavy batch workload in the evening, heavy online during the day, each with different performance and availability characteristics. There's no point, for example, being alerted that a certain critical database is not available during a certain time window when you know that it's always not available at that certain time window, so it's not a big deal. So you can incorporate time of day, day of week logic into the situations, but you can also manage situations using policy mechanisms and things like that to handle the time of day, day of week coding. So the options, incorporate that logic into the situation or use a policy mechanism to handle the start-stop of the situations. So going to the next slide, I show an example of using a policy to manage the situation. So in this case, we see the policy starts with we're going to check to see what the weekday is. And in this case, depending upon the day of week, we're then in turn going to start certain situations. So we're going to start the IMS transaction queuing alert, we're going to start a thread queuing alert, etc., and there could be additional ones as well. So depending on the time of day, day of week, you can actually manage the stop start of the various situation alerts, etc. The advantage of the policy approach, then, is you don't have to incorporate the time of day logic directly into the situation, just use this policy mechanism to drive it. Or if you do not want to have to worry about deploying policies, you want to keep it very simple and basic with situations, there's no reason why you couldn't just incorporate that logic directly into situations. And I have some examples of that later on. Going to the next slide, that says recommendation, customize the KLI Global macro. This is something specific to the setup and customization of IMS of Megamont, wherein if you're going to take advantage of Response Time Analyzer and look at Response Time Analyzer groups and things like that and correlate information, one of the things that can be quite useful is that you customize the groups, and the groups can be based on transaction name, program name, scheduling class, and combinations thereof. You can do wildcarding, etc., and then give the names groups. Like here I'm making a group called part, and this is, I have an example of the macro, and you can see how that in turn then reflects on what you see in the Tivoli portal. And then that in turn then reflects in terms of how you would code the situations. Going to the next slide, that says Megamont XE Prime SV41 product provided situations. So as I implied before, each Megamont provides a set of these out-of-the-box situation alerts. Some of these are useful. Some of these are examples, just a lot of good examples, actually, of how you can start out by creating situations. My general recommendation is that if you're going to use one of these, take it and then you can create another or make a copy of it and then customize it using that. In other words, leave these as basically like templates that you would start from and then customize your own from there using the naming conventions and things like that. These provide a good starting point and gives you at least some management logic out of the box that you can take advantage of. Now going to the slide that says categories of typical situation alerts. I usually put these in the situations in the three major categories, and I try to have examples of each of these. So on the top you could have availability, and availability could be at the level of the application, of the subsystem, of core infrastructure, whatever you need to have in place. In other words, are things up and down? Can I log on to things? Things like that. At the bottom we have performance and resource. Performance would be things like response time, throughput statistics, things like that. Are we getting good application response time through the system? Are we having issues with queuing, etc.? Then on the other side, we have resource. Resource could fall into the realm of such things as pool utilization. Are we running out of certain critical pools? And there's many pools and things like that that may need to be monitored, for example, within the IMS subsystem. Typically, you'll want to create alerts that fit each one of these major categories at one point or another. So going to the slide that says, what are the key resources? Well, there's quite a few key IMS resources that may need to be monitored. And there's different strategies in terms of how you might build, define, or create these situations. There's different philosophies. One of the ones that I may commonly deploy is the approach of building various queuing type alerts. So for example, I want to know if workload is queuing at the level of the transaction, queuing at the level of the system, maybe queuing at the level of the multiple system coupling links, queuing at the level of fast path or whatever it is. The premise is then that if the workload is queuing, that tells me right away that I have some type of a bottleneck somewhere else in the system and I need to go and start analyzing further. So queuing alerts are fairly simple and straightforward to create. I'll show you several examples of these. And they're good indicators that there's problems and issues further down in the subsystem. Also, you can build alerts just on things that are more availability-oriented. Are certain key resources stopped or unavailable or in an error status? A lot of various alerting capabilities specific to IMS database locking, lock contention, N-way data sharing locking, etc. Logging alerts, checking on logging status. Is archive having an issue or not? There's a variety of alerts you can create specific to IMS pools, pool utilization, monitoring critical data sets, monitoring I.O. to critical data sets, monitoring I.O. rates to databases, as well as alerts specific to the IMS subsystem and address spaces. Address space availability, address space CPU utilization, paging. Another aspect of just throughput would be things like the dependent region, percent utilization, etc. I'll show you examples of that in each of these things. So the next few slides, we're just going to step through some of the examples that I've included herein, and just to give you an idea of typical things you might create. And I have about 20 of these. In a few of these, I'm taking the product provided and doing some additional tweaks to them. In others, I'm basically just creating some new situations out of the box. So first, we'll look at a few application performance examples. So we'll have situations to monitor response time. So here again, we'll use Boolean logic. And we're going to assume that the KLI Global macro has been customized. And here I'm just pointing out that you can have a single situation to handle multiple application groups if need be. And then also I highlight towards the bottom that you can use R0 versus R1 response time. What does that mean? Basically, that means that some users may want to not take into account or include the output queue time. R0 just includes input queue and processing time. R1 includes input, output, as well as processing. So depending upon what your philosophy is in terms of how you want to monitor and load on response time, you may use either R0 or R1. And again, consider using the persistence option. This can filter out the outliers and things like that that might skew the average. Using this type of approach with the Boolean logic, you can have a single situation that can handle multiple application groups, etc. Let's go to the next slide that says, another application performance example. Alert when the response time is high and the input queue time is high. So in other words, in this case, I want an alert that will tell me that response time is high, but I only want to be alerted if response time is high and it's related to some type of input queue time that's high as well. The idea then is basically that tells me that I have some type of bottlenecking in terms of the work getting to the appropriate place and I need to do some additional investigation. So it's a slightly different alert than what we were looking at on the prior slide, where basically we're just getting notified of overall response time being poor. Again, same concept in terms of possibly using the persistence option to filter out the outliers, etc. This just shows an example, again, of using the Boolean logic capability. Going to the next slide that says another application performance example. Here we're looking at TRF, or what we call online TRF. TRF stands for Transaction Reporting Facility. That includes then an online collection capability, as well as batch reporting facilities. In this case, we're taking what we call the online TRF data, wherein you can look at things like by transaction level, look at your R1 and R0 response times, alert on things like CPU time, call counts, etc. So the online TRF alerting capability gives the ability to do perhaps a more granular alerting than you would do with using response time analyzer. So now I'll point out then that this mechanism implies that you are running online TRF, which you may or may not be doing out of the box. So that's something you should check. And then this is a separate and different collector component of a Megamon IMS as opposed to the RTA response time analyzer. So different information, different layout and look at the data, et cetera. It really depends on how you want to try to alert on the application. Going to the next slide, another application performance example. Here this is where instead of just looking at things from a response time perspective, if you recall what I was saying before, a lot of times I might look at the notion of how workload is queuing. And if workload is queuing, that implies to me that I have a backup and a bottleneck. So one of the things you can do is at the application transaction level, you can see things like the status, is it queued, is it queuing, or see how many messages are actually enqueued, and then correlate that by transaction name. So here we're just looking at, you know, one of the product provided, the part trans, and then saying if it's any of these statuses, generate the alert. And you can also use wildcarding and substringing and things like that. So you do not have to hard code each transaction, in case I'm giving you that impression. You can actually use wildcarding, substringing, and have a lot of flexibility built in. So going to the next slide that says application performance example, monitoring transaction level queuing. So here basically what we're doing is a slightly different logic, wherein in a lot of shops you'll have a scenario wherein there are certain transactions where queuing is a normal operational thing, and the workload queues up, then it gets opened up and runs through the system. So for certain types of transactions or workloads, it may not be unusual to see a queue. So in this case, we're again using Boolean logic, and we're using the not equal. So we're saying if the messages is above a certain value, and it's not equal to part, and it's not equal to demo, and it's not equal to add part, etc., 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 if it's not equal to those things, then that constitutes an alert. So we're filtering out, in essence, the ones where there may be acceptable queuing. Going to the next slide that says application performance example. You can also, because there are now IMS Connect monitoring capabilities that are integrated within a Megamon XE for IMS, you can also do response time alerting and things like that just from the Connect monitoring capabilities. What's nice about being able to build alerts, response time alerts from IMS Connect monitoring information, if you have it available, is you can take into account the overall response time as well as look at socket times, pre and post times, etc., and have a much more granular, detailed breakout of where the alert might be occurring. One thing I will point out when you look at this, if you look closely at this slide in the note, the Connect monitoring and detail and alerting I'm talking about here assumes that you have IMS Connect extensions along with a Megamon XE for IMS to get this data. Another application performance example on the next slide. Here we're just looking at DB control thread elapsed times. You can also then click the Add Conditions button again and see the pop-up in the lower left corner where we can add CICS region, task ID, transaction task number, whatever you want to do in addition to make this alert more meaningful. So that was several examples of application alerting. Let's go to some availability type alerts. One of the first and foremost, one of the ones you probably would want to track would be logging alerts, archiving. This is an example of a product provided situation. It basically just checks the auto archiving status. If it's a status of inactive, then that constitutes an alert. Product provided situation, single metric, fairly straightforward, but does serve an important purpose. Let's go to the next slide, subsystem availability example. So in this case, what we're looking at here is IMS talking to other subsystems? Is it talking to MQ? Is it talking to DB2? So here we're looking and we're saying if the status is not equal to connected, and then you see the subsystem name, the one on the top is an MQ, the second one down is a DB2. So if we're not connected to these, generate an alert. Go to the next slide, another availability example now. Here we're just looking at the MSC link status. So if the link status is not open, then we're going to generate an alert. So again, this is an example of a product provided situation, but you could also then in turn take the product provided and add additional logic and craft it and customize it as well beyond there, adding link-specific link names and other information. Going to the next slide, subsystem performance example. Here we're going to look at dependent region processing. So we're going to look at the region occupancy number, and then we're going to correlate it by region name and by region type. The idea then is that for certain types of regions and certain specific regions, I may want to monitor the region occupancy. The region occupancy is basically like a percent full, if you will, or a percent busy for the region. Once that region gets to a certain percentage in a lot of shops, workload will tend to back up. So going back to the queuing concept we were talking about before, I might have different acceptable levels of occupancy for different types of regions depending upon the workload they process, which is why I'm breaking out different regions and different region types and setting different threshold levels here. So you have the ability to do that using a situation. Here I basically just took one of the product provided and then added additional logic to it. Going to the next slide, it says subsystem performance example, monitoring queuing at the subsystem level. So here, well, before I was looking at queuing at the level of the transaction, here I'm looking at queuing at the level of the overall subsystem. So here I'm just saying if all the transactions exceed a certain number, that constitutes a queue of workload, and then I want to have an alert. Another example of queuing, so again, going with the queuing concept is a good way to alert. Here, if you're running FastPath, you can also look at queue counts and create queuing alerts at the level of the FastPath balancing groups, which is what we're looking at here. What I've added as well is I've put in the balancing group names and then set thresholds on top of that. So again, different applications might have different levels of tolerable queuing, or I might have it at the same threshold level and not even bother with the balancing group names, just basically say if it's above a certain queue depth level, I have an issue. Going to the next slide, it says performance example monitoring queuing at the MSC link level. Same concept again. This is one of the product provideds where we're just saying if the queue count is greater than a certain number. But again, you can make this be more specific by clicking on the add conditions, and then you could add in the link names, more detail, so that you could then in turn have a more sophisticated alert, or just take the product provided, such as what we have here, and then set it at a threshold that you want. Another important facility that comes into play in many shops is lock contention. One of the product provided is an IRLM real contention rate. So this is a rate, and so this is the number of contentions per second as calculated by the sampling of the OmegaMon monitoring tool. So this kind of a rate is going to be obviously very workload dependent. This will fluctuate depending upon your system, and so your mileage will vary depending upon who you are and what your workload is. But you can do such things as real contention rates, false contention rates, combinations thereof, again, using the Boolean logic. But again, this is one where I would observe on my own system. And then you might also want to take into account using the persistence option as well. Going to the next slide. Now here we're talking about subsystem resource utilization, and resource would be pools and pool usage and things like that. So in this case, there's many pools that are part of the IMS system. And so here I'm showing an example of how from a single situation, you could set pool utilization percentages for your PSB work pool versus your database work pool versus the other pools. And here I'm showing you clicking the snap down, and you can set pool usage as well for your FastPath work pools and things like that as well. And you can do utilization percents, largest free block available, combinations thereof, and accomplish quite a bit of alert logic just in a single situation. And so typically in your system, depending upon the nature of your workload, there probably are certain mission-critical pools you may want to monitor closely because those could be potential bottleneck points. Next slide shows another example. Here we're looking at database I/O monitoring. If a certain database is doing a lot of I/O, well, that could be because, well, maybe we need to do a better job tuning our buffer pools and things like that. But meanwhile, if there's a heavy I/O activity, I/O is slow. So as a result, we might want to be alerted on that. So here we're looking at a couple of databases. We're looking again at the EXCP rate. And so again, the EXCP rate is going to be very workload dependent. And these are just example numbers here. So these aren't magic numbers. I'm not saying 80 is any special number. These are just examples. So again, you can monitor by database, IO rate, and then also you probably, for this kind of a thing, since it's a rate, you would want to use the persistence option to tune out outliers. Going along the lines then, in terms of subsystem resources, on the next slide, buffer pool hit ratio being low. So here we're saying for our various subpools, if the ratio is below a certain value, we'll generate an alert. Megamon provides what your typical hit ratios are in these pools, and in general, the higher the hit ratio, the better your performance is going to be. So how do you get the number you want to set it at? Well, first look at what you're getting in real time in a Megamon, and then craft your threshold alerts around that. Going to the next slide, application availability example. Couple of examples, again, going back to the availability notion. If I have a certain mission-critical app transaction or application that's in a stop status, transaction stopped, the program stopped, whatever the trans P stopped, here I'm putting in the stop status, but you also notice in this example, this is how you can put time of day type logic in here. And then I've also highlighted in the status area the various types of statuses you can track on. Queued, P stop, stop, suspended, U stopped, etc. No regions is a status also. Next slide shows a similar example, but now we're doing an availability check for databases. So in this case, I'm saying if the database is not equal to an available status, and here I'm actually wildcarding, so I'm saying any database that has IVP in the name and it's not available, I'm going to generate an alert on that. I could also, if I wanted to, add the time of day, day of week logic in here as well, I could. The next availability example on the next slide says essential infrastructure availability. One thing I'll hasten to add is I'm not actually using a Megamon XE for IMS for this. I'm actually using a Megamon XE for ZOS. Now, why I'm doing that is because Megamon XE for ZOS, I can create a situation wherein I could say if there's a certain job or task that's not found. And what that means then is if there's certain message regions or other address spaces that have to be available and online all the time for IMS, if, say, those message regions aren't started when they're supposed to be, I want an alert that will fire. Well, Megamon XE for ZOS provides the capability to do that. One of the nice things about the portal concept is just because we're using ZOS monitoring in this case doesn't preclude us from using that to solve an IMS availability monitoring issue, which is what we're doing here. So, in summary then, those are our examples. Situations are the essential building block of the Tivoli portal. You can use situations to highlight performance and availability problems within IMS. And just like on the last example, one of the power of the portal aspects of things is if you have the suite and it's all going to the Tivoli portal, you can use combinations of the technologies. You're not limited to just the IMS monitoring tool. You can also then pull in information from other sources as well and integrate it into your IMS management strategy. So after going through this, hopefully you have a much better understanding of how situations may be built, deployed. We've looked at a lot of examples, and I've talked quite a bit about my personal philosophy on creating situations, crafting the logic, building them, etc. And so with that, I want to thank you for your time. I'm going to turn it over to the moderator for questions, and then after that, we'll open it up for general Q&A. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ed. Now we'd like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey, and right after the survey we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. We ask that you please listen to all options before making your selection. Our first question, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, please press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. It will pause for just a moment to allow you all a chance to respond. For our second question, please rate the level of technical information presented in this teleconference. If it was at the right level, please press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than you needed to hear, press star 3. And we'll be right back with our next question. Are you currently using a Megamon IMS to manage IMS performance? If yes, please press star 1. If no, press star 2. Again, we'll pause for a moment. Do you use IMS Connect for web access to IMS? If yes, please press star 1. If no, press star 2, and we'll be back with our final question. And for our final question, we hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, please press star 1. If no, press star 2, and we'll be right back to take your questions. And that does conclude our survey. Thank you all very much for participating. Now let's move to your questions. To ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. And at this time, I'll turn the call back over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Again, I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend today's conference. We've had a lot of fun putting together these webcasts. We've done a series of these now, and The reception from you, the customers out there in the field, has been, I think, very good. And I like to get the information out and to just tell people about my experience in the field using these tools over the many years. And this is something we want to continue to do again in the future. And I hope you guys get some benefit out of this as well. IMS in particular is an area that I like to work in quite a bit. And one thing that I see quite a bit of is there's a lot of a lot of interest and a lot of effort and a lot of technology being devoted in the realm of IMS, and this is certainly a platform that continues to grow and is very vital, and I see a lot of interesting things happening with IMS over the next few years. Do we have any questions?
There are currently no questions, but I'd like to take this chance to remind our audience to press star 1 if they'd like to ask a question. We have our first person queued, Jim Belva. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ed. A lot of great information. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious as to where the situations are evaluated. For instance, we have a configuration where we have the Megamon IMS agent running in its own address space.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I didn't know, are the situations themselves evaluated at the agent, or are they evaluated at the RTEMS, or is it the hub TEMS?
Right. And that this is one of those traditional "it depends" kind of answers. In general, if it's a what I would call a single table situation, so in other words, we're just say evaluating response time, and everything that we can get is relevant to just what comes out of the response time table for that situation, that is typically going to be monitored and evaluated at the level of the TEM of the agent. Where things get more sophisticated is when you go cross table, cross agent, things like that, more information has to be correlated. In those scenarios, that's where things might be evaluated at the level of the TEMS. As much as possible, if you can craft situations that are meaningful but can work within this concept, again, just think of the table aspect of how the data is gathered. single table alerts using Boolean logic, that's going to run at the level of the TEMA. That's probably going to be the easiest to deploy, the most efficient, and the most effective. But every once in a while, you do need to correlate things, and that's where you would need to get fancier.
I see. And then the connectivity, does the TEMA report to the RTAMs, or does the TEMA report to the hub directly?
In general, the way it's deployed in most shops is you're going to have the TEMA agent address space talk to the remote TEMS on that corresponding LPAR, and then that remote TEMS will connect up to the hub, wherever that hub resides. That hub could be on an outboard box. That hub could be running on an LPAR on Z. It depends on how you opt to configure it. Now, you could redirect an agent directly and shoot it right up to the hub, and in a small environment, that's probably not a big deal. In larger environments where you have lots of managed systems, it probably will scale better if you go through the standard config, which is agent to remote, remote to hub, because then that will consolidate heart beating and provide efficiencies of scale.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. Mr. Woods?
Okay. Well, I just want to thank everyone again for your time, your attention, your questions. It's been a lot of fun. We certainly hope that we'll continue to do more of these in the future. And thank you again, and everyone have a good day.
Once again, thank you all for joining us today. That does conclude the presentation. Have a good afternoon.